edition. Joining us from The Times is a fantastic writer and a great person to have coming on the show every so often. Of course, it's the one and the only Mr. Rory Smith joining us here. Rory, a pleasure to have you on board, mate. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. That's quite a build-up. I'm not sure I can live up to that, to
be
honest.
Well, as I said to you just off air a second ago, you know, you're on BT these days. You're doing TV, you're doing national newspapers, and dare I say it, newspapers with a fair bit of credibility left as well in The Times. So, I mean, you're a man who's busy about town with football these days, mate.
You're making me blush. I'm glad to know The Times has still got some credibility. We do our best. I'm sure it's dwindling. But yeah, it's still probably a little fragment of credibility left.
And I like to see you getting the TV experience in for, God forbid, the newspaper industry to completely collapse on itself as the digital age takes over. But I think that's a bigger topic for maybe a different show. We'll crack on with we'll crack on with the football talk for today. I guess a fantastic night last night for Swansea, Rory, against Napoli. I don't think anybody gave them much of a chance against the Italian giants.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit insulting to Swansea. I agree with you completely. I think a lot of people kind of thought that Napoli was steamrolling them. Having seen a lot of Napoli this season, they're a slightly funny side. They're very good at home, so I'd still make them favourites to go through. But they do seem to have this very un-Benitez-y lack of balance between defence and attack. He left Jorginho, who's a sign from Verona, out of the Europa League squad list, who has kind of improved that a little bit. They are a work in progress. Napoli and Swansea, I think, you know, it was a hugely important night in their history, a really glamorous night in their history. They were always going to tear out of the blocks at a really high tempo, and they did, and it gave Napoli a lot of problems. And I'm sure Darry Monk will be slightly disappointed they didn't make their superiority count and at least get a one goal lead to take to Naples to defend. Because if you look at the teams who've lost at the San Paolo this season, it's fairly illustrious. Didn't Napoli have to be favourites, but no, a great occasion for Swansea. Really, really wonderful to see them. To be honest, kind of getting the Premier League a little bit more credibility in Europe after a relatively bad week.
Do you put the performance down to the managerial boost at all that teams often get when one manager goes and a new gaffer comes in? Everybody's trying to impress, or is this just Swansea returning to the playing style and form of that we're used to have seeing from them in the Premier League over the last 18 months or so?
Yeah, I don't think Swansea were quite as bad as everyone was making out. The problem that Laudrup had is that his kind of whole approach to management is very laissez-faire, very laid back, and that works for a certain period of time. The problem is that when the results don't come, when the performances don't come, the players who have previously enjoyed your laissez-faire, relaxed approach start saying, well, results aren't working out, it's your fault because you're too laid back. And that then becomes kind of a cycle whereby the players blame the manager and the manager loses their faith and he can't pull it back. And that's why, if you look at Laudrup's career, he's had all these clubs for like a year, 18 months. It's at that point that they hit a difficult spell. The players think you're not doing enough, you're not proactive enough, and Laudrup can't react and everything kind of falls apart. So I think Swansea were always likely to kind of recover from that with a new manager whenever he came in. They all seem to really like Darry Monk. If you speak to people at Swansea, They think he's got the makings of something really special. He's had a great education from Martinez and from Brendan Rodgers. And there's the passion there as well. I think to do well for someone who's been so integral to the club's history in the last 10 years, this remarkable rise. So I think Darry Monk deserves a lot of credit. But at the same time, I think we should remember that Swansea are a good team. They're in a slightly false position in the league. And on that sort of occasion, their first proper run in Europe for so long, against one of the big names in Italian football, in European football, they were always likely to really have the bit between their teeth, and that's what we saw last night.
Rory, with Swansea, a lot's been said about the midfield quality, the passing quality that they have. At the beginning of the season, though, quite a few people were very quick to get on the back of their new signing, Wilfred Bonny, who came in with a great goal-scoring record from Holland. How much have you been turned around on Bonny, or did you maybe keep the faith that this new striker was going to be able to come in and adjust eventually to the Premier League, considering the record that he had joining us?
Yeah, mind you, it's a bit of a risk, isn't it, having a good scoring record in Holland. I think it's about 50-50 for players who scored a lot of goals in Holland and how well they fare in the Premier League for every Van Nistelrooy and Alfonso Alves. I've not seen a vast amount of Bonny, I will admit, and even by reputation, a lot of people in Dutch football and scouts from English clubs who'd watched him were impressed. He seemed to have all the attributes you need, the power, the pace, the ability to hold the ball up, great shot on him as well, with both feet, I think, Bonny. He seemed to have all the attributes. There was a question mark, I guess, over the price tag, which was really heavy. It was really high price for a team like Swansea. I thought he'd do as he's done, to be honest. I thought he'd start relatively slowly and get better. But I still think that they're a much better side with Michy. I think we've seen this season quite how important Michy is to them. And I think that everything at Swansea would have been really different this year, including Michael Laudrup's future, had Michy stayed fit. And that's a huge loss for them. Boney's come in and he's getting better and better. There's a huge amount of potential there. I think the problem in midfield is almost that there's two or three players there who the pieces don't seem to quite fit. There's some good footballers. Leon Britton's a good footballer. Jonathan Guzman I really like, although he's not the hardest worker in the world. Shelby's kind of in and out. He sometimes looks like a world beater, sometimes really doesn't. They don't quite look like they've gelled. That's been the problem. I've seen quite a lot of Swansea this season. They don't quite look like they're all there as a team. And that will need work from Gary Monk over the next 3 or 4 months, and then presumably if he does well, as he started well, over the summer and next season. They look a little bit like they're in transition, Swansea, between the team they were that Rodgers brought up and the team that maybe they can be when they become a sort of established Premier League side. So it's a slightly difficult time for them. But no, I think there's signs of promise, and that is testament to Gary Monk's good start. But also it shouldn't be forgotten that Laudrup did a lot of good work at Swansea. They weren't in a weak position when he left.
Now, we all know about the European hangover that can take place after these Europa League fixtures on a Thursday night, and I'm sure Swansea wouldn't have wanted to have had Liverpool straight after a game against Napoli in midweek. Brendan Rodgers returning to his old side once again. How much of an advantage does that give Liverpool, or has this Swansea team now changed enough to kind of make Rodgers' knowledge of the squad and the playing style maybe slightly more redundant?
No, I'm sure that the Rodgers, you know, will be familiar with pretty much everyone at Swansea. As you say, they have got some new players, but the patterns are still the same. The way they play is very similar. Gary Monk is, as I say, a protege of his. So I'm sure that Rodgers will be familiar with Swansea, and the holes in his knowledge will be filled in by Liverpool scouts. It's not an ideal fixture, as you say, for Swansea going to Anfield after on a Sunday after a Thursday, which everyone seems to find really difficult. I've never quite understood why that's more difficult than playing Wednesday, Saturday, but everyone says it is, so I presume it must be. It's not the fixture they'd want, but they will take a lot of confidence from the way they played against Napoli, who are actually quite similar to Liverpool in the sense that they're really good going forward, Napoli, but they struggle a little bit in defence, and that could be true of Liverpool as well.
I was going to ask you about the Wednesday-Saturday Champions League hangover, but I guess we will both remain kind of in the dark on that one, and why Europa League is far more difficult to handle on a Sunday.
Genuinely don't get it. I think it's a really interesting subject. You speak to anybody in football and they will tell you Thursday, Sunday is harder than Wednesday, Saturday. When you ask the supplementary question why, they can't give you an answer. I think the one thing with the Europa League that is a factor that's not psychological is that the travel has to be to further away places. So you look at Spurs, who've been to, I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of the town, but to play Dnipro in the Ukraine. That's a longer journey than, say, going to Rome or to Madrid or to Barcelona or to Munich. That's a factor, but the Thursday-Sunday thing baffles me completely.
I suppose Tottenham will have an even bigger hangover coming back from that Dnipro game as well, especially Soldado. Is anybody putting him on the scrap heap yet? It's not been a great first season at Spurs, and missing an open goal last night as well.
Yeah, he struggled a bit, and I've got to admit to an error of judgment, because when Spurs signed Soldado and City signed Negredo, who both had remarkably similar records in Spain, similar levels of international experience, I thought Soldado would be the one who would thrive, because he's very much a penalty box player. He doesn't do anything else. He is just lethal in the penalty area, despite what we saw last night. And I thought Negredo, whose kind of advantage in Spain had always been his aerial power, might struggle to replicate that in the Premier League. Now, obviously, that was completely wrong, and I hold my hand up to that. Soldado, though, to be fair to him, he's not really... He doesn't seem to come into that much criticism. I think his overall play's not been too bad. His confidence just looks completely shot at the moment in front of goal. Sherwood is standing by him. He says that he's got a role to play. He thinks he'll come good. He just needs that proverbial one or two goal spell, that little flurry that gets his confidence back. But you do wonder, actually, with Soldado, whether if it does continue this drought until the end of the season, whether Spurs might have to look at it and think that they can cut their losses. Someone like Atletico Madrid will need a striker in the summer because Diego Costa will leave. If they think that they can get a decent return on their money from Soldado rather than carrying in front of the season and potentially seeing him lose all value, Spurs might have to look at that. It's a real shame because I think he's a good player, Soldado. But the problem is, you have to have a team set up to play to his strengths. And for a long time this season, Spurs haven't had that.
I was going to say, has he been a more of a sufferer of the circumstances behind him in the midfield with the amount of rotation, the inconsistency in that player playing just behind him down the centre of the pitch that kind of AVB was berated for by the fans at points? I mean, is it all really Soldado's fault? A lot of the time it doesn't appear like he's had a lot of service and consistent service from the same player.
I agree with you completely. I think part of the problem is that under Vs Boas, that he was playing two what are now termed inverted winners, which is a terrible phrase, and just means people playing wide who aren't on their natural side, which meant that they were cutting inside and shooting or clipping little through balls through, and that's not really how Soldado plays. Soldado is, like I say, he comes alive in the penalty area. He needs winners going down the flanks and whipping balls in, probably not to his head but to his feet, so that he can get those 2 or 3 yards on his defender, because his movement in the box is superb. He needs that sort of service. What he's had at Spurs is either these inverted winners who are shooting, so he's left to sort of gobble up scraps, or Christian Eriksen, who's been more impressive, trying to thread through balls for him. Soldado's not the quickest, and in a league where there's a lot of very fast defenders, it's not that he's slow, he's just not lightning fast. Mm. That's not going to work for him. So I think to an extent it's not his fault in the sense that he probably wasn't the player that Spurs needed to buy for the rest of their team, and that is what we're seeing over the course of the season. That said, when you miss from 4 yards out, that is your fault. But that, I suppose, is a function of his confidence. And if his confidence is low, he's going to miss those chances. Just try to snatch it, then they lose that coolness in front of goal that they need. And in Spain, Soldado was superb at. He was absolutely lethal for Valencia. But the question is, Spurs signed a good player. The question is whether they signed the good player that they needed and who fitted in.
Rory, let's have a quick look to the weekend as well, some of the games coming up. And one of the fixtures that's actually caught my eye a bit is Newcastle against Aston Villa, two teams that are either boiling hot or freezing cold. How much pressure is Adam Pardew under with this three-game losing streak that Newcastle are on at the moment? I mean, they've been called at points the worst-run club in Premier League football at the moment. Do you agree with that? And do you think Pardew is in danger of losing his job if results don't pick up?
There's a fair few teams who compete for that title of worst-run club in football, wouldn't they? And Villa, funnily enough, have been in the same situation before. I don't think Pardew's under immediate pressure. I'm sure he'll see out the season. Because basically, he's kind of given a bit of leeway because the fans, I think, are furious at the performances. And you lose at home, get beat, get humiliated at home, really, by your nearest rivals who are in the middle of a relegation battle. The fans are going to be furious. Pardew himself said after the defeat against Spurs that it looked like Newcastle weren't fighting. And that's criminal, really, for a manager to say that about his own players, partly because it's his job to make sure they do fight. He'll be looking for a reaction. But Pardew, I think, is in a sense in a fortunate position, which is that everything that goes wrong with Newcastle is blamed on Mike Ashley and the way he runs the club, which is chaotic and baffling and almost seems like some sort of elaborate joke, because as soon as Newcastle get kind of any sort of stability, any sort of regular path, they just look like they're a normal club, they're kind of getting somewhere, Ashley does something ridiculous. And it's happened so many times that you have to assume he's doing it deliberately, that he almost doesn't want the club to be stable, which is a ridiculous assertion for me to make. But you look at the pattern of his behaviour, it's the only conclusion you can draw. So I think Pardew is fortunate in that sense that the bad results are blamed not on him, but on kind of factors outside his control. But if they continue, and if Newcastle starts slipping down the table, which they could do, because teams like Swansea and Villa might start to put little runs together and close that gap. Southampton, I think, will go clear of Newcastle at some point. They'll finish eighth. And Newcastle could slip down kind of 12th, 13th. They're obviously not going to get relegated, but that could be enough for the fans to turn on Pardew as well if things keep going bad. And the issue is that, as you say, Villa, although they are capable of being terrible, are also capable of being really quite effective, especially away from home, admittedly. And if Newcastle catch them on the wrong day, then that's potentially Villa going to start reeling Newcastle in.
What is a Premier League weekend without talking about Manchester United and David Moyes, given the break, obviously, with the FA Cup and their trip to Dubai? But talk of Van Persie being happier in the Dutch squad at the moment, Chicharito saying that he could have left but wasn't allowed to in January. Now the rumours coming out from that a lot of the players are becoming very unsettled at United, and they take on Toni Pulis's side that are just built, Toni Pulis's side, to kind of hold off and defend at home against the big clubs and get some sort of result. Is this going to be another disappointing weekend for United away at Palace?
it's a tricky weekend for United. I think they might win, actually. I think Palace are not... They are, as you say, Pulis has done a remarkable job. He bought very well in January, but I'm not sure Palace have got the quality to beat even a struggling Manchester United. But you're right, there's no question United are at that stage now where things are starting to mount up. They're starting to see the effect of their problems. Players are talking about being unsettled. Players are never unsettled when they're winning. I'm sure Chicharito had loads of chances to go when United were winning titles and challenging for titles, and I'm sure he didn't bat an eyelid. The problem is that now, obviously, United are struggling. He's not playing. He's not happy. The chances to move come in. And if United, as is their right, say, no, you're not allowed to leave, which is normal for a club if they don't want to sell a player, then he will start to agitate in public for the fact that he wants to leave. And I think that is a natural function of what's happened to Manchester United this season. Their temporary loss of status, the fact that they're almost certain to miss out on the Champions League, I think. If you look at the number of points they need to get to overhaul not just Liverpool but Tottenham as well, it is relatively unlikely they'll get back in the Champions League. And David Moyes has to try and control all of these factors whilst also building his own team, a team in his own image, and trying to get their season back on track so they at least have some sort of positive end to cling on to in the summer. It's a really difficult situation at Manchester United, and no matter how much money you pay Wayne Rooney, you can't hide from that.
It's going to be a bit of a boost, at least, to see Rooney signing that new deal today at Manchester United, but a very rocky season indeed. Rory, an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you today about a bit of Premier League and Europa League fallout from last night. We always enjoy cracking you on the show, mate, and we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed, my man.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, Rory. Take care and have a
good
weekend.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Rory Smith from The Times joining us here on World Football Daily, kicking it back at the end of the week. Taking pretty leisurely affair, I think, through into this weekend, to be honest, because after the excitement of the Champions League...